This is PFW in Progress.
Hello, fellas. Everybody's here. Freddie, Tom, good to see you.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I do you a favor and take Freddie in when you're having a bad time, and then you try to push me out. I gotta kick asses sometimes to make it run right. We had a little argument, Freddie and I, so I had to straighten him out. He was banging cocktail waitresses two at a time.
Paul Perillo.
Come over here, kid. Learn something. You start out with a little bit of oil. Then you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes and tomato paste. You fry it. You make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil. You shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Cut the crap. I got more important things for you to do. How's Paulie?
Oh, Paulie. Won't see him no more.
And Andy. And Andy?
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want to spend.
Andy Hart.
I know it was you. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Some guy named Tom.
Tom's no longer conciliating. Gonna be our lawyer in Vegas. That's no reflection on Tom, but that's the way I want it.
Mike, why am I out?
You're not a wartime consigliere, Tom. Things may get rough with the move we're trying.
Maybe I could help.
You're out, Tom.
PFW in Progress.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
Okay, welcome to PFW in Progress. This is Tom Casale here with Paul Perillo.
Enjoying the Godfather theme music?
Well, I did not know that we were on because you were in here talking. Usually you're in there when we're on. That's web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 if you want to give us a call. We got a lot to talk about. Another tough loss for the Patriots at home. But I guess we should lead off with the news of the day, Paul.
You reach Richard Seymour fan hotline.
The broken.
I'm not available. Give me a call back later and make it a great day.
That's God amazing, bless. By the way. I still cannot believe that he has that.
God bless him.
But the field.
Man of the people, not like Andy Hart. He's a real man of the people.
Right. Richard Seymour, man of the people. The field conditions here at Gillette Stadium that we've grown accustomed to seeing over the years is no more.
They're going to change.
It's field turf is being installed as we speak, broken by Patriots.com. Paul Perillo, right
Patriots
on there right
Football
now. Patriots Weekly. Football Weekly. It's on there right now. Field turf is being installed for the Bears game. The whole field's torn up. They got bulldozers and everything else out there. So that's it, folks. You got what you wanted. You got the field turf. How do you think this is going to change the dynamic of the team, if at all, Paul?
Well, I think first and foremost, and really the only important thing, is now that at least the games can be played on a suitable playing surface. And I think clearly moving forward this year, there was no alternative because that field was a mess on Sunday. Now, any any grass field would have been a mess on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to put this on the new sod or the old sod or whatever. You get that amount of rain in that short period of time in a natural surface, it's going to be a mess, and it was. Now, my point going forward is I don't think it was fixable. They were going to have to redo the whole thing
right again,
from scratch. And I think this is probably the better alternative. I know that some purists out there, like Andy Hart, think that field turf isn't the way to go, but I just think it's a more natural, it's the closest to natural grass that you can get. And for the Northeast, when weather is a factor, don't you think, Tom?
Yeah.
You have to do something.
I think probably in 5 years, maybe other than Green Bay, there's not going to be grass. I with this new field turf, everybody loves it. I mean, maybe in the southern states they'll keep it.
Yeah, like
but,
Miami.
Yeah.
You can have a grass field in Miami.
But all
very
the
few other places.
Yeah, all the places where there's a lot of snow and rain and everything. I couldn't imagine playing on that field on Sunday. I mean, I really couldn't. It looked like you couldn't get any footing. And that takes away from the game, in my opinion. I mean, I like to see, I'm a snow guy. I'm a mud guy. I love that stuff. But, I also like to see good football.
Well, that's my point. Everybody, the phrase that everybody always uses is, that's the way the game was meant to be played. And I don't necessarily think it was meant to be played the way it was played on Sunday. Where neither team can get any footing. You can't really do a whole lot of anything offensively because the footing is not not good enough. I don't think that's the way it was meant to be played. Now, should the elements have an impact? Sure. I'm not saying that every game should be played indoors. You know, if it's raining, you play in the rain. If it's windy, you play in the wind. That's fine. But the condition of the playing surface, I think, should be a little bit better than it was on Sunday. And that, again, is through no fault of anyone here. It's just that's the way it is in the Northeast. It's going to be tough sledding when you get that kind of a rain, you know, and that kind of rainstorm.
So the field turf in, but as far as the Patriots' performance, it kind of looks like the way the field looks right now, a mess.
And I think it's maybe time for a little Patriots therapy, Tom.
Yep.
You and I are going to be in session taking the emailers, and we should just have an extended couch in here and and have a therapy session, because I think everybody kind of fluffed off the Indianapolis game as, you know, a bad performance by the Patriots, turnover filled, still had a chance to win. Well, this game was different. This game, I think they were, you know, outplayed. You know, the players, Richard Seymour specifically, said outcoached.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Jets are as good a team as the Patriots, whereas I think the Colts are on a level with the Patriots. So I was, you know, it was easier to,
right,
to kind of blow that one off. But this one, I think the inferior talent beat, the, in my opinion, the better team. So I think therapy is in session. What do you think?
Well, the way I see it is I hear people saying, well, let's not overreact from just 1 week. I'm not overreacting from just 1 week.
I heard that seven times last year, by the way.
Yeah, and the Patriots have played two good games, in my opinion, Cincinnati and Minnesota. Since they've played those games, Cincinnati's won one other game,
yep,
and it was a three-point win at home to Carolina. And Minnesota hasn't won a game since.
Right.
They went on the road.
By the way, a game that Carolina had a chance to win in the last minute, but Jake DeLone threw an interception in the end zone.
So even those were the only two games that they played well in. They didn't play well against, I got all the Bills the second time around. They whooped on them. But the first game against Buffalo, they didn't play well. They didn't play well against the Dolphins. And this passing game problem, I think people are thinking that they're just going to open their eyes and it's going to all of a sudden be fixed. I don't see it that way. I still think the receivers are what they are. I don't care that Jabbar Gaffney made that nice one-handed grab. I still think he's Jabbar Gaffney. And
you know what the biggest problem for me, Tom, to back up your point, is I think the receivers played as well as they could possibly play on Sunday.
Yeah.
I thought Rishay Caldwell
played
excellent. I thought Jabbar Gaffney, as you mentioned, that's as good as it's going to get. I don't think they're going to get that much better. Maybe Chad Jackson, you know, finally gets it at some point during the course of the season and starts contributing on a regular basis. But other than that, are you expecting 9 for 90 every week out of Rishay Caldwell?
And would you say that Jackson's fourth or fifth on the depth chart right now?
Sure.
Because
I would say that he was fifth, but with the possibility of being fourth now because Gabriel seems to be in the doghouse
after the fumble. So, I mean, that's not a good sign. The offensive line, I don't know what is going on there. Every week there's breakdowns. Brady's getting killed. I mean, he got murdered in that game against the Jets. There was a couple of times I couldn't believe he got up. It reminded me of the Broncos game from last year in the regular season where he took all those hits. You know, they put the money in the offensive line. I know that Neal's out, but, geez, that unit should be playing better than it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, really, and we've heard a lot of talk about the offensive line, you know, sort of being a patchwork group, and I don't really think that that's accurate. They were missing their starting right guard, Stephen Neal.
Right.
You know, Yates went down and Hochstein went in. Hochstein is ahead of Yates on the depth chart, so that shouldn't have been you're missing a right guard. I don't understand. I mean, I think the world of Stephen Neal. I think he's a terrific guy, and I think his story is amazing, you know, coming from where he came from, and I think he's a quality player, but if the difference between having and not having Stephen Neal is this much, I think he was sacked 10 times in the three games, right? Mm-hmm. 3, 3, and 4, I want to say. 3 against Minnesota, 3 against the Colts. Am I right?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe it wasn't 3 against the Colts, but whatever. He's
so
been
either
sacked
2
more,
or 3 against
he's
the
He's been
Colts.
Sacked more frequently lately.
Right.
And that's a bad sign.
Yeah,
four against the Jets, and as you said, Tom, many, many others that he was
and
just
this is a Jets team that came in with 12 sacks. 3 were from Kerry Rhodes. So their defensive front had 9 sacks coming into this game. They blitz, and this is the problem. The Patriots offensive line has no idea what to do when a team blitzes. None. I mean, these guys are coming in untouched. Bill always says, well, when there's one more guy that you can block, you know, that's ridiculous.
Cause that's
as you pointed out, Paul, Junior Seau was blitzing nonstop in that game,
yeah.
And the Jets had no problems discarding of him in the middle of that line. So having guys run freely at your quarterback is not a solution, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I didn't just again, I'll back up your point because I didn't think that they had, overload blitzes. I mean, they were blitzing, but I don't think it was, we're sending six and you don't have enough guys to block. I thought they just had guys coming from places that they weren't expecting.
Right.
Victor Hobson is a linebacker. He was coming in untouched all day.
And, probably should have caused that interception before the half if it wasn't for that ridiculous, ridiculous call that even Fred Kirsch was yelling about in the press box, if you can believe that one.
Fred Kirsch was as animated about a bad call that went in the Patriots' favor as I've ever, I can ever remember it.
That really bothers me that some ass.
He was as upset about that call as he was like Asante Samuel's pass interference.
Yeah, he was yelling with people in the press box.
He was really mad about it. I mean, it was like that call offended him in some way,
Well, and to Fred's credit, he said, I'm for what's right. And that, you can't honestly sit there and say, I mean, the referees, what they said after the game is embarrassing, that he should have known the ball was released and stopped his motion. What are you kidding me? He was in midair. What did you want him to do?
It's the responsibility of, I think that's the word he used, it's the responsibility of the player to know when the ball is gone.
Yeah.
And all I have to say to that is you have to be freaking kidding me. Well, I mean, he's supposed to be clairvoyant. I mean, he's supposed to have eyes in the back of his head to know the ball. Because when when he hit him, the ball was still in Brady's hand.
Right.
So
I mean that was a terrible call.
Making a tackle under the assumption that I'm tackling the guy with the ball.
Yeah, that was a bad call, but it didn't affect the
Jets.
Are
you out of your mind?
They ended up coming away with a win.
I just think that the officiating in this league is awful and has nothing to do with anything fixed. It's just bad. There's bad calls every week, and that was one of them.
So, 2-game losing streak, first time in close to 4 years, traveling to Green Bay. My question is, what happens?
Well, my question is, how are you getting to Green Bay, Tom? Because I know at 3:30, I know at 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, you will somehow be watching Michigan take.
I know it's all propaganda just to get me on the plane, but Fred's telling me that his mini TV is going to work on the plane. So I'm sure at some point at about 3:35, you'll be hearing a bunch of F-bombs coming from the back when I can't get reception of the game. So that's the plan.
Wow. I have one of those mini TVs. Maybe I'll bring mine, too.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
That's what Fred says, that you can get a picture, as
you're
flying.
You have to change the channel quite frequently because, obviously, it's going to be a different spot. ABC will be in a different spot, depending on what state you're in.
But I mean,
you're not going to get great reception. I'm just going to tell you that now.
We should catch most of the second half, if everything goes well, because they'll have all the hoopla for the game and everything. It'll probably start 10 minutes later than it normally does and all that stuff. But, if I can catch half of the third and the fourth.
Why can't they just play this game at 8 o'clock for us?
I was in shock. I thought for sure their whole point of the 8 o'clock game at the beginning, it's weird because this has changed as the season has gone on. The whole point of the 8 o'clock game at first was to have the best game on.
Right.
It was Ohio State, Texas. So now they have the biggest
Florida
game.
Florida State, Miami, even though now that's a joke. That was a marquee game.
And now, as the year goes on, they're just back to their old thing where they just throw a game on at 8 o'clock and all their best games are at 3:30.
They got kind of unlucky this week, too, because they have, I think it's Cal-USC this week.
Cal-USC,
which is a good game, but unfortunately Cal lost last week, so it's lost some of its luster.
So, so we got that game. What happens if the Patriots lose on Sunday, Paul? Is it widespread panic around here?
I think it is. If they lose on Sunday?
Three-game.
I don't know. Am I wrong on that?
With the Bears coming in,
lose to the Packers. The Packers stink.
They do stink, but there's one thing they can do: it's throw the football.
The Packers are not a good team, and I agree with you. And they showed it last week against that same Minnesota team that the Patriots, were given so much credit. The Packers made them look silly too.
Right.
And Brett Favre threw for what, 370 or something like that. And Donald Driver caught close to 200 yards of passes. So they the Packers have some talent, some individual talent, but that's not a very good team. And as you pointed out in the preview that you wrote, defensively, this is a really
bad
team.
Yeah, they're bad. If the Patriots can't throw the ball on this team, they're in trouble. Because they ranked 32nd going into the Minnesota game, and I know had 240.
Are they any good at all against the run? Do they force teams to throw? And they just and teams run, throw a lot against them?
Going into last week, I believe they were 10th against the run and 32nd against the pass.
Do you know how often, you know, have teams decided, you know, kind of like Minnesota, like we're just going to throw on them?
I don't know. I know Hawk, Deion Sanders said A.J. Hawk is having a good year. So
Deion Sanders.
Well, I mean, I heard it on the NFL Network. So one of their linebackers I've never heard of. Both their safeties stink.
But their cornerbacks aren't.
Their corners are pretty good, and they had 27 sacks going into the Minnesota game, so they're putting pressure on the quarterback. That's what makes the one of the things.
I gotta tell you, the more time goes by here, now obviously I'm a little concerned with the Patriots. I wasn't overly concerned about the Indianapolis game, but I am a little concerned after this Jets game. But now the more time is going by, they're going to Green Bay. Green Bay's won a couple of games here. They're starting to feel a little good about themselves. The NFC's weak, so they're not out of the playoff race
right.
At 4-5. You know, they get to 5-5. They probably have as good a chance as anybody
right
for a wild card.
I mean, all the wild card teams are 5-4 right now.
The more time goes by, Tom, the more concerned I'm getting. You tell me they have a lot of sacks, and the offensive line has had some trouble.
Yeah, Campman
is one of the leaders in
sacks.
I'm getting a scared.
And I should say that the pass defense, one of the things, and it would be ranked low anyway, but one of the things that kind of skews their stats a little bit is that's the game where Harrington had the 500 yards or whatever. Remember, he threw for...
Yes.
And the Packers won that game.
Yes.
So that kind of throws it out of whack a little bit because he threw the ball 60-some times.
Right.
And so that
he actually had a low percentage in that game because he threw the ball so often.
Right.
And still only threw for 400 and change or whatever. But, you know, Al Harris and Charles Woodson, I mean, those are pretty good cornerbacks.
Yeah.
I know Woodson's not as good as he used to be. He's not what he once was, but...
But they're not going up against the best receivers in the world either.
That's my point. And if you have, you just say the safeties aren't all that good. Well, this team so far through 9 games hasn't demonstrated the ability to get deep.
Right.
You know? So weak safety play, that might help you.
Right.
It's not going to help you, but it's not going to hurt you as much.
I think the key is going to be is can they force Favre into making mistakes? Because the last couple weeks, you know, he's played pretty well. He hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions, but obviously we know if you can get to him, he'll throw balls into coverage, and that's what you're looking for, what the Bears did to him early in the year. But then again, where's the Patriots' pass rush? They don't touch quarterbacks, so.
I used to look at it as, all the time, Tom, during the Pats' heyday, I used to say, all things being equal was the way I would put it, and that meant turnovers. You know, if you don't turn the ball over, you don't give up a big pull, you know, a big kickoff return for a touchdown or something, all things being equal, the Patriots will win. And that's what I would say virtually against anybody. But now I'm looking at it as like, geez, if they don't cause a turnover or two, I'm not sure. You know, they're kind of toss-up. Now I think the Patriots are going to bounce back. I think this is still a pretty good football team. And I think they'll beat the Packers. But I am concerned about some of the stuff that I'm seeing and hearing, and we'll probably get into the stuff that we're hearing a little bit about this Jets game as we move forward. But Richard Seymour talking about outplayed, outcoached. I thought this was more interesting, and I talked to you about this before we got on the air. Mike Vrabel talking about how they didn't run enough inside,
mm-hmm.
and Troy Brown talking about how the defense didn't come up with a key stop when they needed it. So that's a defensive guy talking about the offense
right.
and an offensive guy talking about the defense. That is not a good sign.
No, it's not, and that doesn't happen around here.
That never happens.
It does not happen.
And they had plenty of opportunities in the past for it to happen, last year especially,
mm-hmm.
early in the year
they
when the
struggling.
Offense was scoring 30 points every game and still needing game-winning field goals and sometimes falling short altogether. They never turned on each other. And I'm not saying that they're turning on each other now. They may have just been kind of innocuous comments, but I thought it was interesting that a defensive guy is talking about the offense and an offensive guy is talking about the defense. Usually, when you ask a defensive guy, they say, you know, we lost 10-3. We got to hold them to less than that. You know, we got to force some turnovers. We got to give the offense short fields. And they said some of those things, but they're also talking about things the offense didn't do.
Right.
That's interesting to me.
And the whole thing about I don't know if you felt this way, but just watching the game, I said to Fred, like, early on, it doesn't look like the team even wants to be on the field. It just, I don't see any emotion.
Not a lot of zip. Yeah.
I don't see anything from them. I mean, the Jets were jumping around when they made a play. You know, they were a team that felt like that they really wanted this game. The Patriots seem like they're a team that feel like, well, if we show up, we'll just win. Kind of like the fans feel about them sometimes.
And that's exactly how it looked like on Sunday to me. And I'll tell you, you know, we rarely talk about Bill Belichick in a negative light in the way he goes about his business and formulates his game plans and whatnot. But this whole thing with Eric Mangini, I think, was a totally unnecessary distraction.
Yeah, brought on by himself.
Yeah, and I don't mean it necessarily distracted his team, but I think it aided the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Lavernius Coles quoted after the game as saying, you know, some of the guys were talking about how he won't call Eric by name.
Right.
He refers to him as the other guy. Well, anytime you disrespect our coach, we're going to do just that, you know. Sure, we're going to give a little bit more to try to, you know, to try to get in there and do what we can to win for him. Now, maybe that's worth absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things, Todd. Maybe, you know, if the Jets needed extra incentive, I personally think a lot of that stuff is overrated. But I'll tell you, we've given the Patriots a lot of credit after the fact for, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers saying that, you know, they're booking their hotel reservations.
Right.
When we know full well the Patriots did too. You know, before the 2001 AFC Championship game, when there was only 1 week in between
right. The
conference title and the Super Bowl, we make these things out to be big deals when the Patriots win. So I'm not going to just sweep them under the rug when the Patriots lose. You know, on the surface, when I hear that Eric Mangini had his team watch the Sonny Liston Muhammad Ali fight the night before the game, you know, the first one when Liston quit, the champ quit.
Yeah, right.
I think that's kind of corny. I think those things are kind of silly. But you know what? When the Patriots do those things,
Belichick does the same thing.
Belichick, what do you think he got it? Eric is doing everything that he learned under Bill. He is being basically the ideal student right now. Everything he does is exactly the way Bill did it, and right now, on Sunday, he did it better.
My favorite was him mixing a salad.
Yeah. That was funny.
But I think you're right, though. Why give the Jets, and this is something that the Patriots are so good at, the unnecessary motivation. No one's, listen, and I said, I've seen Bill Belichick shake other coaches' hands. He's not he's not sitting there for hours talking to you and, you know, patting you on the head. But just walk up, give the guy a handshake, and walk away.
Happy ending.
It doesn't have to.
Yeah, I wasn't asking for any tongue or anything like that, but this is, I think, you know, Gary, do you agree with this? I know you don't normally participate in nonsense, but don't you think that
I helped create it.
Right, but don't you think this was just an unnecessary added incentive that he gave the Jets for no reason? I mean, why? Just because the guy left?
Yeah, everything that I've heard from their players about, you're right, about the not respecting him and all that, that was the Jets' motivation.
Yeah, I just think that there was no reason for it. Just because the guy left? I mean, you act like he scorned you and, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know. It just seems like it's so more, it was taken so much more personally than I think it needed to be. Unless there is something out there that we just don't know, Tom.
Right.
But because on the surface, it would appear to me that Belichick is upset because he gave Mangini the defensive coordinator position with the hopes that he would have that spot solidified a little bit for the reasonable future.
Right.
And then Eric got a job immediately and ended up leaving after 1 year.
And
he feels scorned from that.
Fred,
if that's all it is, then that's ridiculous.
Fred gave me a job at PFW expecting that I'm going to be here. But if the Boston Globe calls, my desk will be empty tomorrow. That's life.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Fred in this regard, because in all seriousness, you know, Fred is our boss, and we joke around with him all the time. But he is our boss, you know, and he's a good guy to work for. But I'll give you an example of how you can handle it differently when you're in charge. Last year, around the time that you came, Tom, I also had possibilities of leaving at the same time that Brian did. I was up for a job at the Boston Herald. Now, Brian Morey had decided he was leaving. Fred called me into his office. I was the assistant editor at the time. Fred called me into his office and said, I want to make you the editor. You know, kind of like going from defensive backs coach to defensive coordinator.
Right.
It's an increase in responsibility. and whatnot, and salary, and a lot of other things that go with it. You know, first he asked me how I felt about it, blah, 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 you know, all the things that normal, you know, employer-employee kind of discussions. Great, Fred. I'm really excited about the opportunity, whatever. He said, well, I just want to tell you, I would like it if you would, I need you to stay for a while. And because he knew that I had been looking in the past periodically here and there for other jobs and for a daily, not because I don't like it here, but for a daily newspaper rather than a weekly.
What do you have, a school paper?
And he told me that he's going to need me to stay here for a while. And I said, yeah, I got nothing on nothing on the horizon. There's no reason why. He goes, you know, at least a year. You know, give me at least a year before you're looking for another job. Don't you know it, Tom? The next day, and I'm not kidding, the very next day, I got a call from the Boston Herald sports editor to have me come in and interview for the Patriots beat writer job. I went into Fred, and I told him the whole story, and he immediately said, well, forget that. You got to go. This is what you've been waiting for.
Right.
So that's how he felt about it. He had just, not 24 hours earlier, had the conversation with me. I need you to stay for a while. We need to solidify things. I can't have everybody leave at once. We'll be in trouble with all new guys. Less than 24 hours after that, he says, well, this is too good of an opportunity for you personally. You got to take it. I don't know, kind of like getting $10 million over 5 years might be too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, I mean, what's he supposed to do? He's 35 years old. They offered him a job in New York to be the head coach. Now, some of us thought that was a bad situation, but that...
And I got my hand in the air. I am stunned by how well he has done so far.
But that argument aside, we all said, you gotta take it. You know what I mean? It's a chance.
It's a lot
of money. It's a chance to establish yourself at a young age, and there's nothing you can do in that situation. I'm sure probably if you asked Mangini and he was being truthful, he was probably shocked that he got a coaching offer that quickly. And, but it happened, and, you know, life goes on. And I think you guys are all right with some of the quotes from the Jets players. There's no need to give them bulletin board material. It happens on every team. Every team posts up that bulletin board stuff, and it just because Belichick is the guy doesn't mean that the Jets aren't going to get motivated by it.
And
they
you know
are.
What? Couldn't he have been just as upset and just as disappointed with Eric just by saying, you know, Eric Mangini during the course of his weekly press conferences? I mean, he didn't have to gush about him the way he does about Nick Saban.
Right. No, right. No one's saying he has to like the guy.
Right.
No one's saying that, but
he could have gotten his point across very easily without letting everybody on the planet know that I'm not happy with him right now.
Well, he was trying to play head games, and you know what? It's funny, because he's playing head games, Corey Dillon is threatening people, and they're losing. So maybe they ought to spend more time with the playbook and the game plan and worrying about winning football games than playing little head games during the press conferences. That's my opinion on it.
All right, well, how about on the field, Tom, on Sunday? What did the Jets do defensively, do you think, that caused so much problems?
I just think they were physical. I thought they were physical at the line. I thought, like you said, their blitzes came from places they weren't expecting. It wasn't like they just lined up and sent 10 people. They were very well thought out blitzes. They came where they must have seen things on tape, things that they could exploit. I didn't think the Jets secondary played all that great, but I thought their front seven played much better than I thought they would. I mean, the Patriots ran the ball on them. We figured that would happen. And I just think they outsmarted them. Defensively, I thought they were more physical, and they outsmarted the Patriots' offense.
Now, once again, for the second week in a row now, a lot of the post-game talk with the fans and some of the talk show hosts here in Boston is centered around the running game. They didn't run enough. They gave up on the run too early. What are your thoughts on that?
They ran the ball 14 times in the first half, 11 times in the second half. I thought they could have run the ball a little bit more. I think the Jets had a lot of time, a lot of drives that ate up a lot of clock.
I was going to say, it's hard to run the ball when you don't have it.
So I think you have to take that into consideration this week. They had some long drives, even when they didn't score. They were only getting, like, when they got first downs, they were getting 11 yards. They weren't getting 30 yards a clip.
No, they were getting three plays, 11 yards, move the chains. That's the way it was all day.
So I don't think they had as much time to run it. So I will say that. Although, for the second week in a row, it seemed like Corey Dillon did kind of disappear in the second half, didn't it? I mean, he didn't receive that many carries, and he had been running pretty well.
No, the big thing that they talked about with Dillon was, and Mike Felger brought it out in his report card today, he had the 50-yard run late in the first quarter. Now, he came out after that run, obviously, you know, for a breather because, you know, he ran 50 yards. That means he needs oxygen. The next, I think there was three plays after that in the first quarter. Maroney ran for 10 yards or 11 yards, then a 7-yard run, and then he got stopped for no gain, and then they threw the ball, and then they had to kick a field goal in the first play of the second quarter. So he sat out that stretch right there. Well, then the Jets got the ball back, threw an interception, but then on the second play after the Patriots got the ball back, they fumbled it right back. From that point, the Jets had the ball for 16 plays. Or 15, by a long drive, a very long drive, like 9 minutes, I want to say, and wound up getting a touchdown to take the lead. And the Patriots got the ball back with about 4 minutes to go in the half, and they used almost exclusively a no-huddle, hurry-up kind of mode late in the half, and they drove down and got a field goal. Not necessarily when you would see Corey Dillon, and you know, at least half of that drive was hurry-up, you know, 2-minute drill. Trying to get in position for a field goal. So the fact that Dillon didn't play much in there doesn't really surprise me. Then he came back in the third quarter, early in the third quarter. Now, I will say, I want to say 11 carries, 98 yards, Tom?
Yeah.
You take out the 50-yard run, that's still 10 carries, 50 yards. That's a lot.
Yeah, he had his best game in a long time.
I mean, it's 10 carries, 48 yards. That's 4.8 a carry. That's a great average for him.
Well, and, you know, part of the reason that the Patriots didn't have much time at the end of the game was because it took Dillon 16 seconds to run 50 yards.
I thought the funniest quote was Andre Dyson talking about how he slipped chasing him down. And he did. I watched the replay of it about halfway. He got about 5 yards away, and then all of a sudden he almost fell down. And it got from like 5 yards to like 8 yards, and then he had to close the gap down again. And for some reason, Corey was just looking back the whole time he was running. He knew someone was coming. I didn't really understand that.
No, I didn't either. But, you know.
Maroney was not effective in this game, and Dillon was. So were you surprised that instead of, you know, whatever, 12 and 11 carries, it wasn't 20 carries for Dillon?
I got to be honest with you. I think they're totally mismanaging this 1-2 punch. Totally mismanaging it. And here's why. I think when you have a 1-2 punch and they're both running well, you feed them both. But if one guy is running better than the other guy for that particular week, that's the guy you go to. Now, I'm a much higher on Maroney than I am on Dillon.
I know you are, but
this week, if I was the coach, I would have said, okay, Lawrence, you worry about kickoffs. You know, the big guy's handling the carries for now. He's running hard. It was Dillon type of weather, that straight ahead running style. And I think they're mismanaging the 1-2 punch because when somebody gets hot, they're still splitting carries. The whole point of this is if you got a hot hand, you ride it. I mean, nobody does that better than Reed in Philadelphia when he's always had those two running backs. If he gets a guy when Buckhalter was healthy, if Buckhalter was healthy, then Westbrook played more of a receiver and he got.
No, not you. I'm sorry.
Oh,
and I was trying to get Brian Lowe's attention in the other room.
But. And you know, he would get more of the carries. So I think when Dillon's run, I mean, how many games are you going to get where Dillon's running that well? You know, pound him. Give him 20 carries. He's not going to die.
Give you another example of Shanahan with Denver. Yeah. You saw it against Indianapolis. Tatum Bell was
with
ineffective.
Mike Bell.
And all of a sudden, Mike Bell was a man possessed in the second half. This is when you draw up a picture of the Corey Dillon day. That was it.
Yeah, that was it.
You're not looking for anything fancy. You're not necessarily looking for the home run ball. You just want to just pound it between the tackles because you can't really throw the ball that effectively down the field. You want to pound the ball between the tackles at 4 yards a clip in the mud and the rain. You want a guy who generally holds on to the football in bad conditions, all conditions. That was Corey Dillon's day, and he only got 11 carries.
Yeah, I just you know, it's great to have two backs, but at some point in a game, if you feel one is outperforming the other and it's his kind of game, give him the carries. You don't need to split it up every week.
By the way, can I change the subject for a second? I saw the Cowboys highlights were going on behind me, and I saw the play at the end of the first half that Romo tried to do. You must have seen it by now.
Oh, he wasn't supposed to do that.
No, I know that. Well, I was going to make the point. It was nice to see Bill Parcells finally come back. because I haven't seen him all year. Did you see the post-game conference comment on that?
He said,
you guys think it's all perfect. You don't know. And he explained the whole thing.
He said if he returned that 99 yards for a touchdown.
This will be a little less than perfect.
And as he said, as it should have been.
Right.
With, I mean, he hit him right in the hands. Autrell Roll, I think. But that, I just thought it was interesting. Not, I'm not pointing out the Romo thing, Tom. That's not my point for pointing that out. Although you know damn well if Bledsoe had done that, the guy would have caught it and taken it to the house. But my point is that Bill Parcells, that's the Bill Parcells that I know.
Right.
Is more, you know, kind of prickly in while winning in victory.
And you know why he's doing this, because everyone's on
the
Romo
bandwagon. Well, you know
how
what? The guy's played great.
No, yeah, and he has, but you know Parcells, it's been three games, not 30, and he doesn't want this guy getting a big head, and so he's knocking him down a peg, and I'm sure he heard about that, because let me tell you something.
That was really bad.
If he returns that for a touchdown, I'm not so sure Bledsoe's not in the game to start the second half.
Well, the only
thing is what kind of mistake that would have been.
The only thing is they would have had to put an APB out on Bledsoe, because I'm not so sure anybody knew where he was. He was just kind of, I'm telling you, they clicked to him like in the, they showed a shot of him on the sideline. He was like sitting on the bench, just like chilling out. I mean, I wonder if he even has a headset on during the course of the game. Like, at least when he was here, when he was backing up Brady.
Yeah, he had the headset on.
He had the headset on.
I
when
can't
Brady
hear
would,
can you hear me?
When Brady would come over, like, you'd see, like, in those Three Games to Glory videos, Tom, you'd see, you know, Drew talking to Brady. I remember at the end of the Super Bowl, you know, Charlie Weiss tells Brady all these things, and then Drew goes over there and he's like, no, you gotta let it fly. He's like, no, it was like, so totally like Drew right there, like, you know, forget about what the coaches said. You gotta let it fly right here. You gotta let it all hang out, Tom. You know, and I'm just like, you know, I just can't see him doing anything really overly encouraging right now. Not that he's necessarily rooting against Tony Romo, because I'm sure he has nothing against Romo personally.
Right.
I like him personally. I'm sure, you know, it's just a matter of him professionally, is, you know, his feelings are hurt or whatever.
Oh yeah, and plus
he was just sitting over there.
Plus he knows when it happened with Brady, he had time left.
Right.
Now he knows he's coming to the end of his career, so it's a little bit different. All right, let's get to the emails here. We have David, and the subject is outcoached. It was very easy to see the Pats were outcoached. Also, did you notice in the postgame interview, this is the first defeat in which Bill did not mention they were outcoached? On second down, the Jets blitz every play. How about a screen pass, stupid?
There's no need for name calling.
Well, we went from "In Bill We Trust" to "How about a screen pass?"
So Bill
stupid.
Must go. They had at least one screen pass that didn't work in that game. I don't think that they had these blitzes that everybody else thinks they did. I think they blitzed, but I think what they did was they did what the Patriots often do. They didn't send that many. They just disguised where it was coming from very well. And I talked to Seymour about that a little bit after the Colts game, because I don't think the Patriots blitzed very much against the Colts, but they had constant pressure on Manning in that game.
You reach Richard Seymour fan hotline.
That's still one of the most surreal moments in Boston radio history. But the point about, you know, just when you don't know where the blitz is coming from, it's kind of different. You know, I don't necessarily – in other words, if they're only sending four or five guys and you have a screen called, well, it doesn't really – you're not necessarily negating a blitz with a screen, because there's still guys there to make the tackle. You know, I mean, they threw the ball 41 times. Brady only got sacked four. So there was other time they had 37 pass attempts that they could have had a guy open. You know, in other words, I don't think that they just blitzed and left themselves open to plays.
Yeah, I think this was one of those things where Mangini was familiar with the team.
Absolutely.
He learned some things from the first game. He watched some tape, and here we're watching it right now. Hobson, see that there was Hobson up the middle. That was the interception by who picked that off? Was it
Eric Coleman?
On the interception by Eric Coleman, Hobson lined up in his normal spot but came flying up the middle, and it forced Brady to get rid of the ball and went right to Eric Coleman. So, you know, they disguised their blitzes very well. And, you know, you got to take your hats off to the Jets. They had a great game plan. It worked. Even offensively, when they got down inside the 10, Paul and I both said, don't even bother running it. What'd they do? They ran it three straight plays, got a touchdown.
I couldn't believe that.
So we didn't think there was a chance. And as Paul brought up to me, you know, Vince Wilfork, with probably his, well, not probably, his worst game of the year. I mean, he's been dominant pretty much all season. And Nick Mangold kind of took him to school a little bit, which is surprising.
And Vince Wilfork, by the way, after the game, Tom, I know you go to the Jets locker room, as upset as anybody in that locker room after that
was
game.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, not throwing fits or anything like that. Very measured in his tone, but very, very upset and disappointed both in himself and at the team. I think, you know, I don't want to have the whole panic button Boston sports thing here that we often do, but I think they're at a little bit of a crossroads here. I think this is a very important time, and they need to get some wins together, and they need to do it relatively quickly. I mean, we kind of broke it down. The schedule, the seven games left, and in my opinion, it's kind of broken up into two parts. There's four must wins against mm-hmm. bad teams in my mind, and then three games that you could probably say
they could
are losable, for lack of a better term.
Chicago, at Miami, and
at Jacksonville.
At Jacksonville.
I think those games are losable games. Now, I don't think that they will lose. That doesn't mean that they will lose those games. I don't want the emails to
but
come in.
But just looking at the surface.
Right.
The,
now, the other games are Detroit, Houston, Green Bay, and Tennessee.
Now, you should
in
win
In my
those
opinion,
games.
Those are four games that you absolutely positively have to win. There's no excuse for losing to any of those four teams.
Right. If you lose to one of those four, then
just one of them. Then I get that panic button ready.
Well,
unless it's late in the year and everything is all wrapped up.
Right. And it's funny you should mention panic button, because Mike in Vermont says, I know it's only two games here, but should we start pushing the panic button? Have you ever seen the Patriot games where the play calling has come under so much scrutiny? How much of the recent failures do you attribute to poor coaching, game plan including, and execution? Could it be that we simply don't have enough talent? Doesn't Tom Brady seem to be more rattled than we're used to? I guess there are a lot of unanswered questions. I know you won't sugarcoat this thing. What do you guys think? I'll just, from afar, I wasn't here then, but Charlie Weiss took a beating here a few years
Charlie
ago.
Charlie Weiss
he?
Took play calling beatings every year he was here.
So, yeah, because I remember Patriot fans, especially the year they didn't go to the playoffs, the rinky-dink. I mean, even my friends who would gamble on the Patriots would yell at the TV, you know, what, throw a pass over 2 yards. So,
well, for 2 years, Brady didn't. You know, that's true. That was the offense. It was a dink and dunk passing attack, and then once teams finally got wind of that, then they opened it up a little bit. And obviously, Brady's evolved. But yeah, Charlie Weiss, you're absolutely right, Tom. Charlie Weiss, when he was here, I thought was an excellent, imaginative, innovative play caller. But there were plenty of times that we criticized his calls. Plenty. I mean, even on this show, even Fred, you know, who very rarely criticizes anything having to do with the Patriots. There were times, I can remember one in particular, they had a key third down around midfield, and they called a wide receiver reverse pass with David Givens in Denver on a Monday night game, and he threw a pick.
Right.
You know, they were just shredding the Broncos at the time, and they were going, you know, getting ready to put the game away, and he throws a terrible, terrible pass with a wide receiver.
You know, I mean, yes, can some of the play calling be questioned? I say yes. Can Tom Brady's play be questioned? I say yes. Can the quality of receivers be questioned? I say yes. Can the consistency of the offensive line be questioned? I say yes. In other words, I think all these things are contributing to a very inconsistent offense right now.
You think that's the biggest problem is the offense, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, and when the defense isn't perfect the way it hasn't been the last couple of weeks, it's been okay, but it hasn't been perfect, I think.
But like
you have a chance to lose.
Even like we were talking earlier, the first game against the Dolphins, they only get 200 yards of total offense in that game. If the defense doesn't play as well as they did, they lose that game too at home. And that's the other problem. I mean, where's the home field advantage?
That
three losses came are at home.
That's six home losses in the last year and a half.
I mean, and I get it's me. Before I got here, they hadn't lost a game at home in 10 years.
Well, in 03 and 04, they won all their home games. In 02, they lost three. In 05, they lost three. And now in 06, they've lost three. That's a lot of home losses, in my opinion.
So it's probably a good thing we're heading to Green Bay. Good for everybody except, of course, me. Who
has to miss the Ohio State-Michigan game.
We got Rick chiming in. He says, I hate the Jets. But I'm not going,
I hate the Jets.
I'm not going to talk about the game because I'm sure the rest of the emails will cover everything. He says, welcome to the field, Marquise Hill. Penalty, see you next year.
Poor Marquise. He's a good guy, too.
He is a good guy. He says Jabbar Gaffney took Bam's number.
No, he didn't.
No. I saw him on the field, so confused.
Jabbar Gaffney's number 10. Yeah, Gaffney's is number 10. 13.
He said, speaking of, he's talking about Chad Jackson. I watched a DVR replay of the Colts game, and Jackson only saw the field on 8 plays that I counted, and 4 of those were running plays. I don't care what off-field hijinks he's involved in. They're not that bad. There has got to be use for him somewhere. In the Jets game, he saw the field a lot more, and I was very encouraged. He's being used as a blocker on running plays a lot, which makes sense given his athleticism. And I like the fact that down the line, he's a willing blocker from spending so much time doing it right now. I hope to see more of him in every game.
He was blocking. He was in on a lot of running plays on Sunday. Andy actually pointed that out during the course of the game, that they were running to his side.
Yeah, and he was. Yeah, I saw that, too. He did do a pretty good job blocking. Okay, Nick's got some true or false.
Okay.
The field is hurting the Pats as much as the visiting teams. Well, that's no longer a problem.
on Sunday, there's no question the field was not good for anybody.
Right.
I thought Mike Vrabel's quote, before you get to the rest of those true and falses, I thought Mike Vrabel's quote was perfect. He said, did the field affect the way the game was played? Absolutely. Did it affect the outcome? Absolutely not.
Right. That's.
I think that's the definite right way to put it.
Mm-hmm. He says Colvin is playing well. I'd say that's false, but we'll have to rework his contract to stay next year. Jarvis and Corey will have to renegotiate too. Corey Dillon and probably Colvin, I would say.
Yeah, I think Corey Dillon's probably.
Yeah, we think Dillon is gone, but. He would definitely.
They don't always agree with me on those.
But if he wanted to stay, I would imagine he would have to rework something. Asante is a Pat next year. A secondary this bad can't just cut their only consistent player.
Well, they won't cut him.
Right, he'll leave.
He's going to be a free agent. That's a big difference. And there's no way they would cut him. I agree with you.
This is not Junior's last season. He continues to play on like Pfeiffer did.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, I do too. This is Falk's last season. I've never liked Kevin.
I'm supposed to be saying true or false, huh?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Who's this?
This is Nick.
Nick, I'm sorry about that, Nick.
This is Falk's last season. I've never liked Kevin very much. He missed the catch last week, although caught 5 others, including 2 for big first downs. But I think he's playing for someone else next year.
I'm going to say true.
Okay.
That would be out of the box for me, because I think that, I don't know, that's a tough one. I think that the better chance is that he's back, but I have a feeling that he's going to go.
Okay. Izzo and Davis are replaced this offseason. Kick coverage this bad doesn't bode well for their job security.
Yeah, probably true on that, too.
Yeah, I would have to say so. Okay, that's Nick in San Diego.
Good job, Nick.
On the phone right now, we have Mike at BU. Mike.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Well, I'm not pushing the panic button yet. I'm praying that it was just a hiccup from a team coming off of a bye week with, you know, the old defensive coordinator who's now the head coach who has a gripe with Belichick and so on and so forth. But to me,
What does that have to do on the field, though, Mike? I understand all that, but the Patriots are better than the Jets.
No, I know they are. I know. That's why I'm praying it's just a hiccup.
All right.
You better hope the Jets lose to Chicago this week, by the way.
Yeah.
We are now scoreboard watching here in the second half of the season, and I, for one, am stunned by that. I have to say that.
But I think the most important thing is, like, even if Brady plays moderately up to his potential and up to what we've seen, I think that they win both the games of the last 2 weeks. I mean, the one play, that play where Graham ran that out route when it was, like, he was out open in the field 20 yards downfield, and Brady just completely overthrew him. I mean, he just seems like he's not crisp. He doesn't have as much speed on the ball. And obviously it leads to the question of whether he's injured or not, but we're not going to find out about that anyway. So just kind of really scary to me that he's just not playing well. And you know, just because of that, then it filters down all the way throughout the team, defense, offense, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I know you say, well, if, but I'm saying if Drew Bennett catches that pass, maybe the Patriots don't go to the Super Bowl. If Mike Martz runs the ball, maybe they don't win that Super Bowl. You know, if Carolina doesn't kick that ball out of bounds, maybe they win that Super Bowl. I mean, you can always say if, but the bottom line is he is playing bad. The passing game has been playing bad virtually all season, so until we see it play better, you know, why would we think that it's all of a sudden just going to click unless they're playing the Vikings?
that's true.
And my question to that would be, for Mike, is why do we think that Brady isn't playing as well? Because I agree, he's not. But why do we think that is the case? There has to be some reasons as to why a guy who's had such a good track record of play has been off a little bit.
I guess, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of reasons. Could be injury, could be the receivers. I think that the game against the Jets, I think that's the best the receivers will play. I think Caldwell had a great game. He made a couple of good plays. Gaffney came out of nowhere, made that great catch over the middle where the ball was behind him, made a good catch on that drive where they scored in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. I think the receivers gave you more in that game than you could possibly expect. That's really why I'm overly concerned. I don't see it getting much better for the receivers.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of scary. I think that, I don't know, we might be heading into not so good. I think we'll still make the playoffs, but I don't think we really have much of a chance at the rate we're going right now.
Yeah, I still think that they'll win the division. I think they're that much better than the Jets, that they should be able to, in the last seven games, finish, be able to hold the Jets off. But, you know, the big picture here is you're right. I'm now looking at it a little bit like I looked at it last year, and I see teams like, Indy and San Diego and Denver, and I'm not so sure that the Patriots are going to beat them. Not saying that they can't beat them, but I don't think that if all things are equal, the other team I think the other team is better if all things are equal, and I didn't used to say that.
I was also wondering if, Tom, your prediction of the Bears not having a chance coming into Gillette Stadium now that we've lost all our games at home still stands.
Well, I say that because they're an NFC team. Obviously, their defense will probably match up well with the Patriots. We were talking about it upstairs. I think that game comes down to one guy. If the good Rex Grossman comes, I think the Bears have a chance. If the Rex Grossman that has played against the Cardinals and some of those other teams comes in, I think they'll get blown out.
Yeah,
and the other part of that would be it's also the third road game of three straight
for the Bears.
Bears, you know, for all the Patriots fans that like to whine about the Jets being coming off a bye week, well, it's the third straight road game for the Bears, and they go to the Meadowlands twice and then to New England. So that's not exactly easy pickings for Chicago.
Yeah. Well, I hope they turn it around. I hope they get more consistent. I think that, you know, hopefully they will. Get some time in practice. Hopefully Belichick will rally the troops, but I don't know. We got to see it on the field, I guess. There's really no more questioning if what. We just got to see it on the field.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks for chiming in.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Mike. Talk to you later.
Mike's over at my alma mater.
Okay. Well, according to Gary, it's time to take a break. We'll be back.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right. Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords. 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4410. Ford. Bold moves.
Come on.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip. And suddenly, my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
Breaks a tackle.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs. Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in progress.
What are you going to do today?
Whatever I feel like I want to do. God!
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
What did you do last summer again?
I told you, I spent it with my uncle in Alaska hunting wolverines. They kept trying to attack my cousins. What the heck would you do in a situation like that?
Paul Perillo.
Are you going to eat your tots?
No.
Can I have them?
Give me some of your tots.
No, go find your own.
Come on, give me some of your tots.
No, I'm freaking starved. I didn't get to eat anything today. Freaking idiot.
And Andy. And Andy?
Well, you have a sweet bike, and you're really good at hooking up with chicks.
Andy Hart.
Plus, you're like the only guy at school who has a mustache.
That's true.
Some guy named Tom.
If you need to use any of my skills, I can do whatever you want. Plus, I could be your bodyguard, too. Or like Secret Service captain or whatever.
Sweet.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
She's the best thing that has ever happened to me. I'm 100% positive that she's my soulmate. I'm sure there's a babe out there for you, too. Peace out.
PFW in progress.
What the heck are you guys doing? Trying to ruin my life and make me look like a freaking idiot?
All right, we're back at, what is this? PFW in progress. Tom Casale, Paul Perillo, we're all shaken by that Jets loss. We got new field turf. I mean, it's crazy around here. It's a web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Email is just piling up, Paul, piling up. We got RJ in Vegas, and he would like to talk about Maroney. He says, after this less-than-hard-fought loss, I have a question about our running game and Lawrence Maroney. It's not whether Maroney is worth it or if he's sick of Corey Dillon. It's why our run game is so god-darn boring. With the exception of the few times Maroney is thrown to by Brady in a screen or a jam, why is he running up the gut every single time he's used? Why can't we use him outside on a lateral run or a flea flicker to break up the line? It seems like he hasn't had a 20-plus yard run for a long time. Also, I'd like to give a shout-out to Rashe for stepping up and leading the team in receptions for the third game in a row. To me, 90 yards is okay for a third, fourth receiver. And one last thing.
90 yards is okay for a third or fourth receiver? How many of your top receivers?
Yeah. What did you
90
guys,
yards is a good game for anybody.
Right. What did you guys think of Gaffney? He has showed flashes of better-than-average ability in the few catches I saw him make. And then RJ chimed in right after that with, I forgot to mention, Casale is the man, but tell him to stop talking about wishing he could bang 16-year-olds. It's creeping everyone out. I said 17, I think.
Well, whatever would make it legal.
Yeah. I like young girls.
I think
we were talking about the Gaffney thing upstairs a little bit.
Well, Gaffney, that's the, you know, I've seen flashes. That was the first he's played. He had one catch before Sunday. So that's I was impressed by him on Sunday, but that was basically the first time I had seen him play. The other thing that I would kind of take exception to is this whole they were criticized. Mike Vrabel, in fact, I shouldn't say that just blankly that they were criticized. Mike Vrabel questioned why they didn't run the ball up the middle more often on Sunday. In other words, they were trying to get Maroney wide and outside the tackles a lot. Mm-hmm. And now this RJ is saying that they don't do enough to run him laterally. You know, Corey Dillon's 50-yard run was up the middle,
mm-hmm.
and he broke it to the outside. I don't think, you know, and I've been saying this all year, I don't think you can make a living in the NFL pitching the ball out trying to get around the around your tackles. I don't think you can do that very often in the NFL. Once in a while, sure. If you have a dynamic guy like Reggie Bush, you know, you throw a reverse in here or there and try to catch the edge or whatever, you can do it. But you can't make a living in the NFL trying to get outside the containment on a consistent basis, I don't think.
Well, I think the problem is here is that the offense is struggling, and I think it's struggling all over the place. And people are picking their poison. They're picking where they want to criticize.
Yeah, and it's struggling in all areas. You pointed it out earlier, Tom. The offensive line has been inconsistent. The running backs have been inconsistent. The quarterback has been inconsistent. And the receivers have been inconsistent.
And, you know, it's hard. We kind of said the last couple of weeks that you can't chalk up any victory to the Jets because they're not a good enough football team. It's starting to get to the point where you're wondering if you can chalk up any victory to the Patriots. Because, like you said, the more you talk about this Green Bay game, you start to think, well, geez, what if they play like this again on offense and Favre gets hot? And, you know, it's kind of a feeling we didn't have here early on in the season.
Absolutely. And I'm as surprised as anybody. I thought, and I even said this before the game, I said, even if the Patriots lose today, I felt like the division was over. Well, I guess the reality of actually having them lose has changed my mind in watching how they lost, because I don't think there was anything fluky about what the Jets did.
No.
The Jets lined up. The Jets were a much better team Sunday than they were in week two when
right.
I saw them in the Meadowlands.
And I'm not so sure the Patriots are.
And I'm not so sure the Patriots are any different.
Okay, we got Steve in Connecticut. He says, I'm going to reserve venting my frustration on the specifics of the last two games as the Patriots remain a good team who will win their division, and if they can work out some of the inconsistencies, can go deep into the playoffs. But let's face it, this is not the same team that treated us to multiple Super Bowl titles. With the Patriots' second loss in a row ending their one last streak, the last bastion of New England's world championship team has been swept away. I no longer feel it's appropriate to showcase the three-time world champions banner so prominently on the website. The 49ers, Cowboys, and even the Steelers, who won last year, don't boast such statistics on their homepage of their websites. This is, this guy uses big words. This is the purview of an almanac, media guide, or my Three Games to Glory collection. Don't get me wrong. I've seen this team go 1-15 in back-to-back years, so I appreciate them being competitive year after year. And even if they don't win at all, maybe the fans and organizations collectively putting the glory days in the past can help right the ship and earn a Super Bowl, whatever this year is, championship banner for the website instead. Yeah, Steve, first, I'm not that intelligent, so when I'm hosting, don't use big words and certainly don't use Roman numerals because I have no idea what those mean. We learned about that in, like, third grade, and that was, like, 40 years ago for me. So what Super Bowl are we on?
41, I believe.
Yeah, so he says, get rid of the banners, forget about the past, and hopefully they can put a Super Bowl 41 banner on the website. So Fred Kirsch, no more Super Bowl banners on the website. Steve says that era is now closed. Paul Perillo.
Well, I disagree with that a little bit. And I'm not a big fan of throwing your accomplishments in everybody's face. I make fun of the Raiders all the time, you know, for the whole commitment to excellence thing. And they always have their three Super Bowl trophies everywhere prominently displayed. I'm not a huge fan of that, but it's much better for the Patriots than it is for those other teams. They've done it more recently. I mean, the Steelers won it last year, but the previous four had come 20 years ago, 20-plus years ago. The Patriots have won three in the last 5 years, and now if they were to win it this year, it's 4 in 6 years. Is that not at all connected when you win 4 in 6 years? Now, I would guess that Steve's point is it's impossible for them to win the Super Bowl this year, but I'm not willing to say that yet. I think it would be impossible based on what I've seen over 9 games, but there's still 7 games
right.
left. You know, the way they played in the first 9 games, I would say it's impossible for them to win the Super Bowl. But I've seen it in the past where they play their best football in December, November and December, and into January. If they do that again, I'm not going to rule them out for a chance to win a title. Are you?
No. And 4 and 6, that's what, who did it, the Niners or the Steelers?
Steelers did it in the 70s.
Steelers did it, the 4 and 6.
76, 77, and then,
you know, that's considered.
No, 75 and 76, was it?
Yeah, I get them all mixed
maybe
up.
Maybe 74, though. 75, 78, 79, I don't know, something like
76
that.
76 might have been the year they had that great team and didn't win it.
And didn't win it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't win it in 76, and they didn't win it in 77. So they won it in 74 and 75. And then they won it in 78
and 79. Yeah. So, I mean, there's still hope. I mean, they're not playing well. You got to say it like it is, but it's not over. I mean, look at the NFL. It sucks. Seriously. The Colts are lucky to beat the Bills. These teams all stink. It's not just the Patriots. Believe me, somewhere in Indianapolis, they're on the radio right now going, this team may be undefeated, but, so it's not all, you can go anywheres and find weaknesses in any team, because there's not good teams in the NFL anymore. That's the way they wanted it. That's what they got. You think the Chargers are great? Look at their secondary.
They had to score 42 points in the second half to win a game.
And I like the Chargers. I think they're a very good football team, but all teams have weaknesses.
Yeah, and the other day they scored 42 in the second half, and it still shouldn't have been enough. They should have at least had to go to overtime.
And by the way, that was my game. Only I could give out a game and lose it like that. It's the only time in NFL history a quarterback's thrown for 400 and a receiver's gone for 200 on the same team, and the team has lost. So that's why when I get the emails that say, boy, why'd you quit gambling? That's why. Because you're sick and tired of being associated with stats like that.
Well, I'll tell you, the Patriots came close to doing that in 1994. I don't know how many yards Ben Coates had in Miami on opening day of 1994, but I know that Bledsoe went over 400, and Ben Coates had to be darn close to 200. And they lost 39-35 at Miami on the opening day.
So there you go.
More useless knowledge from Paul Perillo and Sean McLaughlin, because I'm sure Sean knew that.
I think that you pronounce this Arian. He's a first-time writer. His email is a little long, so try to cut those down a little bit, Arian. He says, first-time writer, but I've been tuning in to the podcast daily. The podcasts are excellent, and that the four of you really have chemistry with one another. Also, after listening to all of Tom's rants, I must say that he's by far the funniest of the bunch, and he can definitely count me in as a fan. You are great too, Fred. Obviously, this guy is an amateur. with so much negativity after the consecutive losses, I just wanted to point out a few alternative points. I won't read everything he says, but I'll point out the points. Winning in the NFL is hard. I believe that is pretty self-explanatory. He says, as much as Pats fans like to think that we will win every game, in reality, winning in the NFL is hard work, and any team, even the elite ones, have a chance to lose at any given week. And he points out to the Colts and the Bills, the Chargers and the Browns, Raiders and the Broncos as examples of good teams that have had problems. Tom Brady is human. You know, as great as Brady is, he may not be playing his best football and all that, but he's still Tom Brady. He's entering the prime of his career, and with all the weapons at his disposal, he'll end up playing to his potential by the end of the year. 3, losing isn't the end. In today's NFL era, a salary cap, winning the championship is difficult, much less 3 in the past 5 years. As fans, I think we have been spoiled to the point where anything less than a Super Bowl is a disappointment. Yet when a team has been as successful as the Pats have been, free agency and retirements are going to take a toll. Every team goes through a period of decline. Yet if the Pats can execute properly, they still have a very good chance of competing with any team on any given Sunday. So after he looked at the schedule, he says, after looking over the schedule, many people guessed that the Pats would finish 13-3 or 12-4. And he said, you never know what's going to happen any week. Sorry for the long email. Keep up the fantastic work. Well, I mean, what do they got? 3 losses? Yeah, that's 12-4.
Well, I mean, I predicted 12-4 at the beginning of the year.
I predicted it too.
And I think that's an excellent record. I totally agree with the email. I think 12-4 in the NFL, I think you're an elite team if you go 12-4 in the NFL. However, that doesn't mean I think that you are a Super Bowl contender. And depending on how that unfolds, and like I said, the way it's unfolded thus far, I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. Now, things can change. If they lay the lumber to the teams that they should beat, and then, let's just say that they lose one more. Let's say they lose to, I don't know, Jacksonville, okay, and they go 12-4, Tom. Mm-hmm. If they have an impressive performance against Chicago, an impressive performance at Miami, they soundly beat the also-rans that they play in Houston and Detroit and in Green Bay, then I think that you might have a chance to do some damage in the playoffs, depending on how things unfold, the matchups and all that. You never know. But if they beat Green Bay say, the way they beat Buffalo on opening day, you know, by the skin of their teeth. And then they do the same, you know, with a couple other teams and maybe get blown out by Chicago. Then I'm going to look at it and say, well, again, when they play a good team, they're not ready to win. You know, and I'm not going to have that. I didn't have a lot of confidence going into the playoffs last year that they were going to win the Super Bowl. Now, I know that fans could make an argument that if they didn't make all those mistakes against Denver, they could have very well won, and they're right. But the fact of the matter is they did in the regular they did in the playoffs what they did in the regular season. When they played a good opponent, they didn't play a perfect game. That's basically what the problem was in the regular season last year, and it was a problem in Denver in the playoffs. And that's how I look at it now. If they continue for 16 games to play up and down football and squeak by subpar teams and not stack up against the good teams, I don't see any reason why it will change in the playoffs.
No, I agree. I don't think it will change. So, we have a couple of people chiming in, answering questions or commenting on things that were said. Ron and Raymond, New Hampshire. I don't know what website Steve is looking at, but there's no mention of Super Bowl wins on the Patriots site. So, that just goes to show you how often we go to the site.
Well, I don't study the site, you know.
And then someone has given us the stats from the Dolphins game that you were talking about.
That you were talking about.
No.
The
Bledsoe game.
The 94 game?
Bledsoe had 421 in the air. Coates, 8 for 161.
Yeah, I told you he had to be close. And if he didn't fumble in the fourth quarter, he may have gotten to 200 on that play.
And the guy who made Bledsoe, Turner, 7 for 61.
That from Casey?
No, it was just a fan had cut and pasted it.
Yeah, no, that was a great game. That was one of the most entertaining games I've ever watched. And I remember late in the game, they were driving, Tom. They were trailing 39-35. They were driving. And you know that deep seam pass to Benjamin Watson that they complete every once in a while here? Well, they must have completed that five times that day to Coates. And one of these came as the Patriots are driving, and he's in the clear. But between two guys, he splits through them, and he's in the clear, and he got caught from behind. It was one of those they stripped the ball out from behind, like Doug Gabriel this week. They got the ball out from behind, and they fumbled the ball around the 20-yard line as they were going in to take the lead in the last 2 minutes, and that was game. But he might have ended up, if he had run all the way for the touchdown, he may have gotten, I don't know, probably not 40 more yards on that play, but would have been close, and they may have won the game.
So the obvious question is, was Coates benched?
No.
Okay.
Wound up catching 96 passes that year.
James is disappointed in the coaching. Hi, guys. I know you will be getting many emails saying they are disappointed in the play of both the offense and defense. I say that I am disappointed in the coaching just as much, if not more. Yes, the offense failed again to take advantage of early opportunities to build a good lead in this game with the penalties and sack of Brady at crucial times that either ended up making them settle for field goals instead of touchdowns or took them completely out of field goal range. They even failed to take advantage of an early turnover by giving the ball right back to the Jets. I say these mistakes cost them at least 11 extra points. My question about the coaching is, why did they have Brady throwing the ball 37 times when they should have just pounded the ball with Dillon since he was best suited for the type of conditions they had Sunday? This was proven when 7 of Dillon's 11 carries were for 5 yards or more, and 5 of those resulted in first downs. With that kind of success, you should keep giving it to him until they prove they can stop it, or when those, and by then those few passes you do throw would be a lot easier to complete.
Well, we talked about it, and I think we both agree with James. I think that was a day for Corey Dillon. I'm not necessarily saying the amount of team runs needed to increase very much, but instead of 12 and 11, I would rather have seen, you know, 20 for Dillon and 3 for Maroney. I think that was a day for Corey Dillon. He's a mutter, and he showed it. And I think he's right with those stats. You know, 5 of his 11 carries for first downs, how many of them? 8 of the 11 were for 5 yards or more.
Mm-hmm.
That was a day for Corey Dillon. I would have liked to have seen him, feed the beast. Give him more carries.
Okay, and Josh is coming in on a Dillon's 50-yard run. He said, I'm still feeling down about this loss to the Jets, but I can't stop thinking about Dylan's 50-plus yard run. If Maroney was in there, it would have been for a touchdown.
You can't please everyone,
maybe
I guess.
Maybe change the whole game around. Impressive run by Dylan, but should have been a touchdown by Maroney. Thanks, Josh in Jacksonville. So some people want, you know, Dylan, and I'm a Maroney guy, but I just thought in that game, Dylan was running well. You know, he probably had that chip on his shoulder from the week, too, you know, people talking about him. And, you know, guys like Dylan, he's 33 now. He's only got a few good games left in him. That's a fact. That's not, you know, it's not my opinion. That's just life. That's what happens when you turn that age.
Yeah.
And this looked to be one of those games.
I agree.
You know, I thought he should have carried the ball more.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, probably if Maroney had a chance to carry the ball in that play, he probably does go for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is Dylan was much more effective on that day than Maroney was with an equal amount of carries.
Phil from Austin.
Phil. Philip.
Gary. A little slow on the draw today.
Just happy he's paying attention.
Comparing this year's teams to that of 2000.
Tom bounces around, so I wasn't sure who was next.
Comparing this year's teams to that of 2003 and 2004, I think the talent level may not be as high, but it's pretty close and better in some areas. What areas are those? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't think the problem
is the players. It's the coaches. Those 2003 and 2004 teams had three future head coaches as assistants, and maybe four if you count Jeff Davidson. This year's coaching staff has none. Those teams.
Well, how can we say that?
I don't know. He's got Jeff Davidson as a head coach.
No, I mean, I think that might be the. I mean, he's basing that on the fact that he's ascended to a coordinator spot already. But how can you say that they don't have a. How do you know that Josh McDaniels in 10 years won't be a head coach candidate? I mean, how do you know?
How do you know he won't be head coach next year?
I'll tell you right now, a guy to keep him. Brian Daboll could very well be a head coach someday. That's unfair to say that they don't have any future head coaches.
Excuse me here.
Sorry.
And I'll go right back to last year for an analogy. What struggled last year? Patriots defense. The reports that Belichick took over the defensive play calling from Mangini. Defense was weak for 10 games last year.
Yeah.
What happens? Mangini gets head coaching job in New York. So you don't know. You don't know who's going to get hired when. Trust me, when you got owners like Jerry Jones and Daniel Snyder out there, you don't know who's
going to
get hired.
I will say this. If the Patriots continue to be successful going forward, and by successful, I don't mean winning the Super Bowl three out of every 5 years. I mean constantly being in the playoffs and in playoff contention. If they continue to do that, members of this coaching staff will get head coaching jobs in the future.
Well, Phil goes on to say, those teams didn't get out-coached. They didn't beat themselves, and they won more than their share of close games. The players believe that their coaches would put together good game plans and make adjustments during the game. I think these players have lost confidence in their coaches, especially the offensive coordinator, who appears to be in way over his head. I think Bill Belichick, either through arrogance or lack of foresight, has neglected to put together a coaching staff that's capable of getting this team to play at or near its capabilities. Bottom line, this year's team just isn't any fun to watch.
Well, it's hard to get happy after that. And Phil's a good, passionate fan, too. So for Phil to be that upset about it, you can tell that it's...
Phil is not happy.
It's a troubling time. I agree with some of his points, however. I do think that there has been some questionable game planning. And I think the players... The reason I say that is the players have kind of called it out a little bit. I thought there was some rumblings, Tom, after the Indianapolis game. We saw comments from Logan Mankins about running the ball. We looked like we were running the ball better. We saw comments this past week that we already talked about with Seymour, Vrabel, and Troy Brown. So with that in mind, I do think that maybe there's a lack of confidence there. And I also think this is something that you were very outspoken about at the time. They haven't really replaced... And there's no question in 2003 and 2004 they were better in the coaching staff with Weiss and Cornell. No doubt about that. And they haven't replaced him. And, Tom, you pointed it out. Why didn't Belichick go out and get some guys to come in and replace those guys instead of worrying about his system and keeping it all in-house?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why you can't go out and get a guy with a wealth of football experience and have him learn your system if you want to keep your system.
Right. I mean, there's plenty of guys. It seems like they hire guys in like 5 hours. I understand you promote from within, but why not go through the process? I'm sure Bill knows a lot of coaches that aren't here, that are in college, that are in the pros. Why not bring in some other guys in, talk to them, you know, see what the ideas they have. Maybe that works out for you. I just, you know, and I see it in Dallas, and I think it's the bully mentality. I really do. I think Parcells and Belichick like to boss people around, and while that may not be best for the team, I think that's what they like, and they like to surround people they know they can bully.
Could be.
We have somebody on the, we have Jamie in Houston. Jamie, what's going on?
What's up, fellas? It's an ugly Tuesday after another ugly Sunday.
Yeah, you, a little more concerned this, after this one? 'Cause I am.
You know, guys, and I want to kind of ask a smart-ass question to an extent, you know, in the face of a lot of what the other emails I'm hearing. You know, how many interception has Belichick thrown or, thrown this year? How many, you know, missed tackles has Pease?
How many touchdown passes did he throw when they won the Super Bowl? How many interceptions did he...
Exactly, that's, you know, and I find it ironic when, you know, we were on the winning side of thing, you'd hear commentary from the players, you know, it's like, oh, the players, you know, it's up to the players to make the plays. You know, when things were good and they felt that, you know, too much credit was being given to Belichick and the coaches. And then now that, you know, things have kind of gone a little sour. The players are out and, you know, the play calling and the strategies. And I think that's kind of self-serving, a little shallow. But when it all is said and done, it's the players making plays. It's the players executing that really matters. And, you know, they're just not executing. Brady is playing like crap. And we can make excuses for him. Oh, field conditions. Oh, he had new linemen. And that helps. I mean, that there is some mitigation there, but he's just been playing like crap. The line just hasn't protected him well. You know, Brown and the other guys out there, the stalwarts who have been there and have continuity, haven't stepped up either. You know, it's more the offense, and they're just not getting it done.
Well, that's true.
I can't argue with any of that.
Yeah.
I really can't. And I think Jamie's right. And one thing is that the players have constantly said, you know, the coaches have put together solid game plans for us. But, you know, it takes the players to go out and execute them, and you can't have it both ways and all of a sudden say, well, the game plan wasn't that good, so we shouldn't be made responsible for not going out and executing it as well.
Yeah, because you can have a good plan or a bad plan, but they'll both fail miserably if you don't execute either one.
Yeah, I the only thing that I would say about this past game is I think too much attention is going to be put on how badly the Patriots played. And I don't think I thought the Patriots played poorly against Indianapolis.
They played poorly both weeks. They didn't play enough to win.
I don't think they played well enough to win this week, but I don't think it was necessarily because they were so bad. I think the other team was better. I say better on this day. I don't think the Jets are better. I think they were better on Sunday. Whereas against Indianapolis, I just think the Patriots handed them the game.
Well, and then also, you know, again, more mitigating circumstances for the Patriots. Did New York just come off the bye prior to that game?
Yes, they did.
So they had a little bit more planning. You know, Mangini was in it. You know, it meant more to the Patriots.
What does that have to do with it? I keep hearing this. The bye week. The Patriots have bye weeks. Everybody has bye weeks. Stop with that nonsense.
Come on, let's look at it.
Listen, they got outcoached. They got outplayed. So what?
They have an extra week of game plan.
It's like Paul said, the Bears are coming here on a 3-game road trip. Are you going to call up and complain about that?
I didn't hear anybody in Buffalo complaining that the Patriots were coming off their bye week when the Patriots pounded the Bills. I mean, it's just, that happens.
You get. I don't care what anybody.
Everybody has a bye week, Jamie.
Having an extra week to prepare.
So when do you want the Jets to have their bye week? Not before they play the Patriots, because that might help the Patriots out. The NFL doesn't work that way.
What I'm saying is, I'm not upset about it. I'm just saying that's a point for the New York Jets. It gave Mangini extra time to plan, and I'm not saying that's unfair. That's just the way it is. But you know, that's just, you know, if people want to, you know, make excuses for the Patriots, you know, there could be some point to that. Plus, Mangini, you know, he knows the system. You know, he's not too far removed from the Patriots system, and, you know, he's going to, and there is parity. You know, people know each other's stuff, especially
I think all of that is more of a reason than the bye week. Matter of fact, I think if you want to use the bye week as a positive for the Jets, I would actually turn it around and use it as a negative, because I don't think a team could go into its bye week on any more of a down than the Jets did. getting absolutely.
Come on, guys,
they absolutely got stolen.
They can get more focused. They can get unfocused, or they can get more focused.
And how long do you think it took them to shake?
Rested, and they have more time to prepare for that.
And there's plenty of coaches. There's plenty of coaches out there with losing records coming off a bye week. One of them being Mike Holmgren.
How long do you think it took him to shake off an absolutely terrible call that cost him a chance to tie that Cleveland game? You know, and that's a tough, tough way to go into your bye week. You lose to a bad team on a bad call, and you have to sit and stew about it for 2 weeks. I think that's at least, outweighs or at least kind of evens out any positives that you get for extra, extra planning time or whatever. You still have
more time to plan, whether you let the pass get to you or not. Good coaches don't let you do that. And again, I'm not putting a whole lot of credibility into an extra week, but to me it certainly doesn't hurt. It's only a positive in more regards than.
Well, if it was, then no team would ever lose coming off a bye week.
And again, when they're
playing a team that's not coming off a bye.
It's not a guarantee, but it's certainly not a minus. It's not a minus in anybody's category that they're getting extra.
Well, I don't look at it as a plus either. I think it's irrelevant, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, we're all inside of it. And then just talking about Eric, I thought I saw the end of the game, and I thought it was in bad form for Bill. You know, the way he just kind of shook him off. I mean, he almost didn't even want to shake his hand. It's like he kind of stared at his hand and shook his hand real quick. He couldn't get his hand away from Eric quick enough.
Yeah, according to Eric, I don't think he was going. I don't think he planned on shaking his hand. Eric kind of grabbed him.
Yeah.
Grabbed him by the forearm and kind of made him shake
his hand. Don't know if that's made much news or if there's much bugaboo about that or it's been discussed, but I just think that's, Bill usually touts himself as a professional and, does the things the right way. And we like to think that he does the right things, in those situations. And, I think him and Tom at certain points, they're just, a little too, up on themselves to admit when they've been beaten, had a bad day.
That's a good point.
And I think they need to work on that.
It's a good point, mm-hmm. Jamie. And I'll say, haven't had a lot, it's easy to say that he usually does things in a certain way. Haven't had a lot of opportunities to do it in any different way because they don't lose very often.
Yeah.
That's a very good point you bring up there.
And a champion is better defined by the way he deals with failure and bounces back from failure than, and if that's an indication how they're going to, experience and deal with, failure on a protracted timeline, it doesn't fare well for us.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it shakes out.
Interesting.
All right, guys. We'll let you go. Go Pats.
Thanks
all right,
a lot, Jamie.
That is a good point because they don't lose very often. So we haven't seen how they handle it.
The one thing I'll say, though, in the last 2 years, Indianapolis Colts 22-4, New England Patriots 17-10. 17-10 isn't bad, but this isn't the old 14-2, 15-1.
No,
Patriots.
I know, but what I'm saying is
starting to lose a little more.
It's starting to be. I think Jamie's right. I think you're starting to see these things a little bit more often. Last year against the Colts, Tom Brady doesn't do a post game press conference. This year against the Jets, Bill Belichick almost disdains Eric Mangini at midfield. You're starting to see some examples as these losses are piling up. I thought they handled themselves remarkably professionally in Denver last year when they got knocked out in the playoffs. Matter of fact, I wrote my whole post-game analysis about it, saying how they walked off the field. They didn't point the fingers the way so many teams had against them in big games. They didn't say they were the better team. I know they felt they were the better team when they left the field that day.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't say that. They gave all the credit to Denver and said that they played poorly. They didn't take anything away from the Broncos. Other than that game, though, I think you could kind of question how they've lost, the way they handle themselves afterwards. And Jamie's right. When you're used to winning all the time and doing things a certain way, maybe it's, if it's an indication of how it's going to be in the future, if they don't always win, maybe it's not a very good indication.
Right. Well, Russell Early Doucette is not happy.
Early Doucette, not happy.
He is not happy. Great to hear they're putting in the field turf. It's about time. Anyone remember the original blue AstroTurf of Schaefer or that green cement they had prior to returning to natural grass? Paul?
I don't remember any blue AstroTurf, but I do remember the old turf at Schaefer Stadium. Yeah, it was awful.
So why is the blame still being placed on the receivers? They are not a great bunch, true. But how is it their fault that Brady misses Maroney wide open and instead throws it to Coleman, or Graham wide open and 3 miles over his head? I put the chance that Brady has some sort of surgical procedure to his throwing arm, Or maybe since Bailey's interception in the playoff game, the clock struck midnight and Tom is a sixth round pumpkin putting Gabriel in the doghouse because he fumbled. Hey, the guy was fighting for extra yards and players are grumbling. Signs are not good. Is it paranoia to be concerned? Keep up the good work. Love the show. Oh, and did you guys really get Super Bowl rings, or did you get the Lustrium ones they sell on the website shop? I didn't get nothing, so Paul.
I have a Super Bowl ring. I have actually two of them.
So he said, the Gabriel thing, I'm with Paul. I think it has more to do than that fumble.
It couldn't just be one fumble, but...
Everybody. I mean, if that was the case, Kevin Falk would have been caught years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was always under the assumption from all the sports that I played is that a coach isn't going to get on you to that extent for a physical mistake.
Yeah, and it's the kind of fumble. I mean, he was like trying for extra yards and it popped out. It wasn't like it was a careless type of play.
No, I watched the replay and I was wondering maybe did he have it on the inside and had it exposed to that hit, and he didn't. He had it on the outside. It was a great play by the Jets defender to pop it out from the back and not be out of bounds. It was an incredible play.
It happens.
I think we're going a little too far if we think Tom Brady's turning into a sixth-round pumpkin, however.
this is weird for me because I came in here last year, and despite them struggling last year, you couldn't get a person to say a bad thing about them. If we criticized them last year,
we got killed.
Now, a year later, fans are calling Brady a bust. They want Belichick replaced with Rich Kotite. I mean, I can't believe how quickly things turn around here.
How do you feel about that Daniel Graham play? I mean, he was open on that play, but that would have taken a perfect throw. He was underneath. You would have had to thread the needle because there was a guy underneath and a guy over the top. And now I've seen Brady make that throw, and I think he missed him. I think he was open and he missed him. I don't think it was quite the easy. It wasn't like the Maroney throw.
No, it was.
It wasn't quite the easy completion, I don't think.
But once again, I think people are so used to seeing Brady make that throw.
Well, I remember the quote earlier in your tenure last year, I've seen greatness, and Tom Brady is greatness.
Oh, did I say Brady or Peyton Manning?
Tom Brady.
Okay. I'm not off it yet. Tom Brady.
Oh, I'm certainly not off it. I think he's a great quarterback.
Although I would like to see him play a good game pretty soon.
He's not. I mean, he played, in my opinion, he's played one Tom Brady-like game all year, and that was Minnesota.
Yep. And as we found out, a lot of people can do that against Minnesota.
Yeah,
so.
And in subsequent weeks, every quarterback has done the same.
Josh T. from Arlington. How much do you think Maroney will benefit from the installation of field turf, considering his running style? I doubt it'll have an impact with Dylan. Any idea how field turf is in the snow and very cold, wet weather?
It does get slippery in wet weather, but it is a much better surface than natural grass would be late in the year like that. I think it'll benefit a guy like Maroney, don't you?
Oh yeah, I think he's much more dangerous on turf. I mean, we saw that in Cincinnati. So it won't affect Dylan. He's only going to be here for, you know, eight more games or whatever.
Oh, plus it's not going to affect him that much anyway.
He ain't going anywhere. He ain't going anywhere, baby. Bakery ain't open yet. So Maroney, I think, will benefit quite a bit, especially when you get a bad feel like it's been. Two out of the last three games here where you're slipping. That's not good for a guy like Maroney who likes to cut and cut back and things of that nature. Chris, he's got two questions. Why do you think so many Pats players are speaking to the press about problems on both sides of the ball and being outcoached? And also, do you think that Belichick is dealing with his personal life is having a negative effect on his ability to coach the team? I would say no to the second one.
Well, I don't think that it can help, though. I don't think
it doesn't help.
He's obviously dealing with some personal stuff that I don't think really, you know, I don't really think it's all that appropriate that we talk about it because it's personal stuff, but it can't help. That stuff can't help him during the course of a week, even if he's, you know, it's like I said with Tony Dungy last year, which was on a much more serious scale with Dungy, obviously. You can't possibly prepare as hard as or as extensively as you would. You have something else on your mind. It's inevitable. Now, as far as why the players are calling it out, I don't know. You'd have to ask them why they're deciding to say what they say. We don't sit there and say, why would you say that?
Right.
When they finally tell us something. You know,
we're not complaining.
We're not complaining that they're, that, you know, sometimes that they give us a glimpse as to actually what's going on in their heads.
Okay, Jay from Hanson. Hey guys, great show. I think we are very lucky to have Bill as our coach. With that said, he has come across as petty, juvenile, and unprofessional in the way he has handled the Mangini situation. I don't care what promises Mangini might have made to Belichick before he got the Jets offer. It in no way excuses Bill's behavior. Grow up, Bill. Here's my question. Does anyone know Belichick's contract status? He has looked pretty worn out. Even after victories, doesn't appear as quote-unquote upbeat as he has in the past. Could retirement be in his near future? I don't know what upbeat means, but Paul, you can handle this.
I've never seen him upbeat, but I will say that based on the letter of what we know, his contract is set to expire at the end of this season because he signed a 5-year deal and a 2-year extension. However, it is our assumption, because the last time he signed an extension, we didn't find out about it until a full year after the fact. It is our assumption that Belichick is under contract beyond this season. We do not know how long. We don't even know that for absolute certain. But I don't think that he's going anywhere soon. But I also don't think he's going to be here, say, more than, 10 years from now, I don't think he's here. Let's put it that way.
Well,
5 years from now, I'm not sure he's here.
I don't know either way, but I'll say this. If he's on the fence, I think that China trip pushes him over.
Oh, that could be. You know what, Tom? You might be right. We joke about it, but that might be the kind of thing. You know what? My heart's just not into it, and I'm not making this trip.
Right. You know, of course, I'm saying the same thing.
If you're on the fence between, like, a sanitation department job and whatever.
So you never know. The next time you stop and get gas, it could be me and Belichick. They're getting ready to pump
fence.
It. James from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. When the season started, everyone was saying that other than the Patriots, the AFC East was not strong this year. Maybe when it started, it was not. But as the season goes, as the season goes on, that statement seems to be proven wrong. As the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins have beaten good teams, and the Jets and what?
Who did the Bills beat?
That's what I'm wondering. And the Jets and Bills took the Colts right down to the end and only lost by 3 and 1 points, respectively. The Patriots better start
Everybody
playing.
Everybody does that to the Colts.
The Patriots better start playing and coach much better, or they may not win but 3 or 4 of the remaining games and be on the edge of missing the playoffs, even though we thought it was a lock for the Patriots to win the division. Also, have you seen a team as lucky as the Colts have been this year? That easy-looking schedule down the stretch does not seem as easy now with how well some of those teams are playing. Luck cannot get you out of playing bad in every game, and they may lose 2 or 3 of those 7 games they have remaining if they play like they did last Sunday. Have a great day, James. Well, according to James, the Colts and Patriots are out of playoff contention because they're going to lose 6 of the last 7 games.
Look, the Colts, I think, are a team that's capable of losing to anyone because they can't stop the run.
Yeah.
Now, I also think that game on Sunday against the Bills, They should have won that game by a lot more than they did. They actually played the way the Patriots played against them the week before, only they found a way to win the game. I mean, they had long drives that they turned the ball over on. The Bills scored on a long fumble return for a touchdown by Terrence McGee. Yes, they got a little break when Lindell missed a field goal against them. But after that, there was still 6.5 minutes left, and the Bills couldn't get the ball back because the Colts just ran it right down their throat.
Yeah.
And they would have scored on that drive had they had to score. they nailed on the ball to run out the clock.
And Fred Kirsch, being the play-by-play man that he is,
says the
Bills lost on a last-second field goal attempt that they had. I looked up and I said, does that say 6 minutes up there
I looked up the game book to see what happened, and I went in and I said, oh, by the way, there was 6:44 left in the game when Lindell missed the field goal. And then the Colts took over and never gave the ball back.
I thought when I saw it on replay, it must have said 44, and I just wasn't seeing it right. So the next time I went up to the TV and I said, this is 6:44 on here.
That's Fred Kirsch, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll take one more, and then we'll take our final break. Len, it seems that several of Brady's interceptions in the last 2 weeks are tipped up through the hands of a receiver, then caught by the opponent's secondary. I am wondering if this is just bad luck, or is there something Brady or the receivers should have done differently?
Well, neither one of his interceptions on Sunday was tipped.
No,
and I count the one that was called back.
Yeah.
you know, because, I mean, he threw it. And then the one that actually counted went to Eric Coleman, not tipped.
He says, obviously the receiver should have caught the ball, but I am wondering if there is some type of hand placement a receiver should use so that in case they don't, the ball bounces down, not up. Regards, Glenn.
No, I would think that the Kevin Falk interception is the only one really that I would put in that category. The one that that ended the Colts game, he threw it to Kevin Falk's hands. And actually, we talked to some quarterbacks who told us you shouldn't throw the ball high over the middle to a running back like that. You should throw it, you're aiming for his chest there, not above his shoulders. And the fact that Falk had to reach up for it, that's where it's going to go. But the other interceptions weren't like that. They were balls that were deflected, but one was deflected by a Colt. And the one that Watson had all he could do to get a fingernail on the other one that was deflected. Look, I'm as big a Brady defender as there is, but Brady hasn't played well. And the interceptions that he's throwing, are very uncharacteristic of him, and they are his fault, not the receivers.
Okay, and with that, we'll take a break and be right back.
It's here at your local Ford store. Comprehensive coverage on every vehicle we sell. That's right, Ford stands behind every 2006 model with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. Every Mustang, every 500, every Freestyle, every Explorer, even every F-Series truck. Every new 2006 Ford vehicle comes with a 5-year, 60,000-mile powertrain extended service contract at no extra charge. That's security. Plus, right now you can get 0% financing on select Fords, 560 coverage, 0% financing. At Ford, we're with you every step of the way. See your local Ford store or call 1-877-4-FORD-10. Ford, bold moves. Come on, baby, let's go.
How are you? Please, sit down. What's the reason for your visit?
Well, Doctor, I need to ask you about something that I've been feeling lately.
Go on.
Doctor, you see, every time I drink Pepsi, I start hearing this. It's here in my head, and it seems like it's coming from inside of me. And then I start feeling an urge to dance and jump, and a strong sensation of happiness fills my whole body.
What else?
You know, I take a sip. And suddenly, my hips start shaking, my feet start sliding, and it happens when I'm with my friends, at school, out in the street, at my granny's house, even when I'm at the movies. It happens everywhere. Tell me, what is it? What is going on?
Well, I know what your problem is.
Yes?
You're out of tune. The song goes like this.
Pepsi, it's the cola.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the 3-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron
Grillers, they're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. With Patriots Gridiron Grillers, you don't have to wait for the game for that great stadium taste. Gridiron Grillers are available at Agar and CNS Wholesalers, Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Food Master, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, Stop and Shop, and at your local supermarket. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, we're back. PFW in progress. Tom Casale and Paul Perillo. It's web radio at patriots.com. Web radio at patriots.com. We got some more emails here. Let's try to plow through these before a disgruntled John Rook joins us after his Longhorns had everything set up for him and they came up short at Kansas State. I'm sure he will not be in a good mood today.
I'm sure that we'll be here to pour a little salt in those.
Oh, moves. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what we do.
Shannon, he says, hey, guys, kiss my ass.
Hey.
That one is intended for any Brady-bashing Patriot fans that might be out there.
Okay.
Two headlines of articles from back east I saw where Brady throws another clunker and Brady's magic missing in loss. Tom Brady is not to blame for the Jets' loss on Sunday, and his magic sure isn't missing. Try giving the guy more than half a second to get rid of the football already, and we probably would have seen another Patriot win. The line play on both sides of the ball was horrific. Brady was getting hammered and pressured all game long, and Pennington's jersey was still white after the game. I'm sorry to hear that Yates broke his leg, which has to suck. And lay off Gabriel already. He is what he is, average. But that dude definitely needs a haircut. He looks like a beast woman from Xena the Princess Warrior or something. Good day.
I agree. They got outplayed on both lines on Sunday. I think that's an accurate assessment.
Yeah, I do too. You know, like we said, Wilfork didn't have one of his better games, and Ty Warren wasn't. Of course, didn't matter. For those of you, we were in the press box, and you know, we got the inactives, and I saw Ty Warren's name on there, which is obviously the biggest name. And I said to Fred, I said, "Hey, did you see Ty Warren isn't playing?" And the cocky Fred Kirsch says, "Doesn't matter. They don't need him."
Right.
So,
based on the way Belichick had the game plan together, evidently it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah,
we still would have had, you know, Marquise Hill and, you know, out there instead of Seymour and Warren, because that's just the normal rotation.
Right. So, you know, obviously
I'm being facetious. Yes, that was a significant injury.
Warren, especially against the run.
Yes.
He's very good against the run. Chad, hey guys, huge fan of the show. It's good to hear radio announcers not always kissing the ass of the team they cover. Anyways, I know you all thought we were supposed to win the game.
Wait till Fred's on.
I'm guilty of this. I thought they were going to win and win easy.
Yes, I know you all thought we were supposed to win the game on Sunday, and that is why on the site it says Patriots 7-2 versus Packers 5-4. That is not correct.
We'll have to get that taken
first
care
of all, the Packers aren't even 5-4.
No, they're 4-5.
So those are two extra wins on there. Next question.
Next topic.
When the team, let's say the Patriots are in, when a team, I don't know what that means. Let's just go to, let's say the Patriots are in the red zone on the 15-yard line and the defense gets a penalty for 15 yards. It's called half the distance to the goal and a first down. But if the offense was to get any penalty, it's marked back as the total penalty. Why is it only half the distance, yet you can be driven backwards? Thank you, guys.
If they got a 15-yard penalty backwards, it would have been half the distance to the goal. If they're on their own 15-yard line, you're saying?
And they're going the other way.
If you're on your own 15-yard line, you get called for a personal foul, 15-yard penalty on offense,
yeah,
it goes half the distance to the goal. It doesn't go to the 1-yard line.
Right, but he's saying if you get it the other way, it goes back 15 yards, I think.
I don't understand.
It's
always half the distance to the goal.
No, but he's talking
offense
about...
Offense or defense, depending on which goal line you're closest to.
But I think he's saying if you're in the 15 going in, you're the offense, and you get the penalty going back towards the 30.
That's the rule.
That's what he's saying.
The only time it's half the distance to the goal is if it goes toward the goal line within the 20-yard line.
Right. He's saying if you're on, like, say, the 14 and it's a 15-yard penalty, it's half the distance. But if you take the penalty, you go back to the...
But that's
29.
That's the rule.
Right. He's wondering why. Settle down.
Because you don't just give the team a touchdown or a safety, whatever the case may be.
This is true. Sean, he says...
Although I will say this on that. If you're on the 16-yard line and you get a 15-yard penalty, I think the ball should go to the 1-yard line. If there's enough yardage to mark off the penalty before you get into the goal line, I think it should go to the 1-yard line.
Okay.
I don't think it should be half the distance to the goal. I think it should be whatever it is.
Okay, Sean says, I get it. Coaching, coaching, coaching. But don't blame Bill. The reason for the Pats' losses have been solely on the coaching staff, from the quarterback coach down to the special teams coach. From what I can see, Belichick's beef with Mangini is the fact that he lost the best coach on his staff to the division rival, Jets, and now has to put his faith in his current coaching staff. So don't blame it on the players. But what I saw Sunday was the new Pats playing the old Pats. What? He says, what I saw Sunday was the new
Jets and the new Pats.
What the Jets did Sunday was the same thing the Pats used to do to Peyton Manning, then mix in a little offense, dinking and dunking all over the field. It's about time the Pats wake up and start watching films of the old Patriots.
Well,
and while they're at it, break out Charlie Weiss's old playbook, the trick stuff and things like that. In close, I want to agree with what I heard early on PFW. If a guy's hot, he's hot, so keep feeding him.
Yeah, good Tom Dylan. Said that, and I agree. Dylan should have gotten more carries on. So that's the one thing I agree with his coach stuff. The rest of it, I think, has been overblown a little bit, but I do think that Dylan could have gotten more carries and Maroney less. Not necessarily more team runs, but the distribution, I think, could have changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. Last year, everybody wanted to run Eric Mangini out of town because the defense was so bad.
Other than the new Patriots.
And I heard all this talk about how Dean Pease, you know, he was more of a veteran defensive coordinator and had more respect from the players, and they liked the way his style better. And now all of a sudden, he was the best coach on that staff last year, and they're missing him. I don't know. I suppose it's 2020 hindsight.
And say to not blame Bill, he put the staff together.
If it sucks, That's the one thing about the Patriots is it's not a democracy.
No.
It's a dictatorship and run by Bill Belichick. And if there's going to be credit or blame, that's where it falls.
Exactly. James again from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. I have a quick question. Do you think the coach's tendencies to not stick with the run, even when it's working, is a result of Brady's reputation of being that big game quarterback, and they are hoping he will finally start playing like he has in the past? How else do you explain the fact that after a big run and a first down, they start passing and never go back to the run?
Well, I don't know. Like I said, I think there's always times that you can question these play calls, and I think we're right to. I mean, that's as a fan, I think you have every right to wonder why a play was called. And Bill has often told me in the past, Tom, that, you know, when it comes to questioning a football decision, absolutely, that's fair game with Bill. He has no problem with that. But I don't know the reasoning why he would say. I mean, I don't think that he doesn't run the ball because he thinks that's working, but is expecting break. Listen, you can't just run the ball. You need to pass the ball to score points in this league in general. And I just think it's very easy to sit here and say they didn't run enough. I don't think they have more problems than play calling, I think. But
yeah, they definitely
James
do.
Is right, though. That's the majority opinion, is that they haven't run the ball enough the last 2 weeks.
Right. My paisano, PJ Naccarelli, is chimed in. He said, hey, guys, I heard you talking about the way the Patriots take losing. I don't want to tell people what to care about, but when it comes to me personally, I don't care if BB shakes Eric's hands or if Tom Brady speaks at a press conference. Well, it's Tom Brady is supposed to speak at the press conference, if I'm not mistaken.
But fans
right?
don't care about that stuff, but they miss the point as well. It doesn't have anything to do with aiding the media's job. It has to do with showing, you know, this is supposed to be a first-class organization, and when you do those things, you're not first-class.
And how many times did Peyton Manning face the press after, I mean, as much as you hate Peyton Manning, when he loses, he comes out and he faces the media, and he's done it every time. So
right.
If you're going to lose that many times, you know, to one team and you're able to do it, if you lose once, you should also be able to do it, in my opinion. He says, nobody knows the full story. Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. We are rooting for the guys in the NFL who are getting arrested for terrible offenses like spousal abuse and the like. I don't care if someone on my team has a personality flaw or holds a grudge too long. The only way I care is if it affects the team on the field. If not, as fans, we have been conditioned to root for the uniform. That's true, but we don't know if it's affecting the play on the field. And he says, and I hear John Rook laughing, hey, Tom, tell John Rook the Huskers are waiting for those overrated Longhorns in the Big 12 championship if Texas happens to make it.
Oh,
love the show.
Oh,
later, PJ.
Them
and there
words.
He is. At this, John,
chair. I think it's broken.
John, I only have one question for you. How's the Texas basketball team looking this year?
Oh, thanks, Tom.
Well, they had, you know, you can't get it mapped out any better for you, my friend. Everything happened that you needed to have
happen. It absolutely did. I mean, you know, it's pretty easy to see, though, that number one, Colt McCoy was actually a little bit more valuable to the team than, you know, most people, I guess, thought, number one. Number two, Texas secondary is vastly overrated.
Oh, man.
I mean, Aaron Ross didn't show up at all. He was pathetic. And let's see. I believe pretty much the Gene Chizik is a little bit conservative in playing against the run. He's allowing his defensive backs to come up, play on the line of scrimmage a little bit, peek into the backfield, and then they're throwing over the top.
Yeah, those guys were wide open.
And their running game, they're just not consistent with it at all. I mean, you know, Jamal Charles should be the one to get the ball most of the time there. So, you know, what can you say? They had it. There was that three-minute span in the third quarter. They had the game. They were down by 7 at halftime. It was 21-21 after they scored to open the second half. They had the football after a turnover, had the football inside the 30-yard line of K-State, and they fumbled the ball. And that started 21 straight points in 3 minutes and 6 seconds for Kansas State. Game over.
I wanted to ask you this. I didn't see the game, obviously, live, but kind of following it, I know McCoy went out early.
Yeah, after the first drive of the game.
Now, was that 21? I know that I think K-State blocked a punt for one of those touchdowns.
They blocked a punt, and it led to a touchdown.
Did they turn it over a lot with the backup quarterback?
No.
Because my question is, they scored 42 points, so let's not put it all on Colt McCoy's absence here.
No. It was not on Colt. I mean, like I said, the secondary was horrific. I mean, the kid Freeman, I think, is going to be a very, very physically talented quarterback before he's done. Josh Freeman.
Yeah.
I think he's a good guy that we're going to have to watch, and we may be talking about in NFL tones in 2 or 3 years. He's got that, you know, Dante Culpepper style body. He's just big and he's fast. He's mobile. He's got a lot of things going for him. There's no way that he should have thrown over the top of that Texas secondary. I mean, people have talked about Aaron Ross being, you know, potentially the Jim Thorpe Award winner.
Yeah,
and I'm like, where the hell is that?
I agree with you. When I watch him play, I don't know where they're getting that from.
I agree. You know, the Texas secondary is very physical, but you gotta cover. It's one thing to hit.
Yeah.
But when you hit, you gotta wrap up. They've actually done a better job of that than they did on Saturday night, but you gotta cover.
Right.
I mean, you got to at least, you know, be with the guy. I mean, they got suckered. Did you see they got suckered on 2 option passes?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Fool me once. How's the saying go? You know, so I'm just saying that was a joke. I had to turn it off after the second one. You know,
I told you he'd be ornery today.
I can't blame him. And you said it right, Tom. You had all of those teams. You had starting with the Thursday game.
They'd be number 3. Right?
They
Louisville,
had it.
Louisville goes
hands.
Behind them. Cal goes behind them. Auburn goes behind them,
right,
and
right.
God, you almost even
which
got,
I called.
You almost
did,
even
did
got
I call
Florida.
That? Florida should have gone. I watched
Florida
the whole Florida
thoroughly,
South Carolina game.
I watched the whole game. They thoroughly outplayed.
Absolutely.
And
I thought South Carolina was going to win it, and they should have won it.
Answer me this. Did you see the replay of the 55-yard field goal late?
Yeah.
In the, that was not delay a game.
No, it wasn't.
The clock had not gone to zero
That's
when they
correct.
Snapped the ball.
That's
I cannot
correct.
Believe there
I don't
was
know
no
why
argument
they let
about
stand.
This.
Yeah, it was.
I thought
it was pretty much simultaneous.
I thought Spurrier was going to have an aneurysm on the sideline, but I cannot believe
somebody
there was
didn't.
No argument over this and no talk about it afterwards.
Apparently, that's something that was not reviewable.
A guy should forget review. A guy should lose a job over that. This is not calling pass interference that you thought was pass interference. The clock either goes to zero or it doesn't. If it's not clear, you're wrong. There's no judgment. It's not
disagree.
A judgment call.
I don't disagree, but they
talk about
over-officious like
and having an impact on the game.
It did.
That
it
was huge.
Huge impact on the game.
Of course, Vern Lundquist still doesn't think he made the field goal.
Well, that's another matter.
So, John, what do you
think?
Wow,
he lost it, by the way.
Yeah,
watching
yeah,
that,
yes.
Listening to that whole game, misidentifying whether passes were complete or not. Calling a pass intercepted when it hits the ground. I mean, there's no one there. A guy dies for it. The ball. Unbelievable. We need some new blood in play-by-play.
Thank you.
Rant over.
I'll be happy to
John
step
Rook,
in.
John Rook, CBS, so, right here
John,
on CBS.
What do you think about your overrated Longhorns playing the Huskers?
Your overrated Longhorns.
I don't think that they're overrated. I think 11 is about where they deserve to be.
The emailer said
they're overrated.
On this show, it's email-driven. We don't have all the guests that you have. Email-driven.
I will say this.
Their secondary doesn't play any better.
That it will be, you know, Nebraska will win that football game. That being said, this is on a relatively neutral site field, as opposed to playing in Lincoln, Nebraska.
They play in the Dome, the Alamo Dome?
They actually play, I think, at the Jones Dome, Edward Jones Dome.
Oh, it's going to be St. Louis this year.
St. Louis. So
they move that around, huh?
Yeah, two or three different sites.
It's been in, now that I'm thinking, it was in Kansas City 1 year, I remember.
Yeah, so my guess would be that on a neutral site, you know, Texas should still have an upper hand. But like I said, if the secondary plays like they did against, you know, Josh Freeman, Nebraska will win. I don't disagree with that. That's a crying shame, actually, because Texas has a tremendous amount of talent. Still do. And I do believe before Colt McCoy is done, Tom, and, you know, please correct me if you feel the need to here, but I do believe before he is through at Texas, Texas will make another run at a national title because they are still stocked.
Yeah, Mac Brown's the best recruiter in the country. They're loaded. So they will definitely make another run.
So are we also talking turf here today? What's up with that?
Turf, everything.
Field turf being installed.
Well, I realize I saw the stuff going on out there, but, you know, so what did happen to this supposed rule that you couldn't do this in midseason?
No such rule, according to Jonathan Kraft.
Okay. So that being said, doesn't it take a while for the new turf to, like, adhese itself to the surface?
Apparently it takes a week.
You would say, I guess, probably takes about a week.
Yeah, that's when they smoke.
2 weeks, so.
I find it unusual that they would do this in midseason, that they wouldn't just do the stopgap measure and keep replacing the turf.
They would have had to have done
hash
again,
marks.
Yeah.
Because, after the game on Sunday, it was just horrible again. And we said that first thing, you could see it deteriorating as the game was going. Yeah. And I'm like, there must be a fundamental flaw in the way that field was constructed for the turf between the hash marks to continue to take the pounding, because that turf obviously was just put in. Maybe it didn't catch, but it certainly wasn't victim to numerous athletic events and numerous concerts like the previous turf was.
Right.
You know, so I'm thinking, how do they do this? And I wonder, you know, bigger picture, how this affects potentially the Revolution. And, or any of the, you know, so-called
you can play
world-class events that are held here.
The Revolution can play, the MLS. I think that
it may keep Team USA and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the federal, you know, the
FIFA.
FIFA. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I guess you can play on field turf, but no game has ever been played on field turf yet.
So FIFA has approved it? They just haven't done it?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. See, I'm not a big soccer expert,
but that's what I've been told.
I don't know that particular as well, but all I know is that they were reluctant to do it simply because of the soccer aspect of it and because of the World Cup implications, because obviously any time the Cup or any time of a national team event happens, they come to Foxborough. Foxborough is like Team USA's, you know, one of their central homes to play international matches in this country. And so I'm thinking, well, that's as long as, you know, that's something to hang your head on. I suppose that's something to hang your head on. But, I mean, that kind of, I wonder if that kind of rubs that out of the equation now. Not that it matters at all for 2 weeks from now.
Right. So, Tom, we better get going because we can't dawdle on Tuesdays.
We don't want to get an ass whooping from Fred. What do you got, that pencil neck geek Brian Lowe coming down here today?
I suppose that that's going to be the case.
Okay.
Who knows?
All right. Well, we got a TV show to do. Our job is never done. Fred and I will be back with you tomorrow. John Rook next.